It was a breezy summer day here in Wisconsin, and I was sitting in a white plastic lawn chair at my grandparents' house. It was one of our regular family barbecues, but this one felt a little different because my grandparents were selling their house. I sat watching my cousins range in age from toddler to preteen play various yard games, remembering all of my own memories over the years at this very house. I knew that this would be the last gathering just like this one. Now, it wasn't a total surprise that my grandparents were moving. You see, they were older now and just growing tired of all the maintenance that came with owning a house and a yard, and had become snowbirds living in the Southwest states for the cold months of the year. And while any change is hard, and I knew I would miss this house, I realized that they needed to let go of this house in order to move into a new stage of life. "Come with me," my grandma said, ushering myself and the other grandchildren inside. She opened a closet with a dramatic flourish, and we saw that inside it was filled with objects of all sorts, varying from wall decor to shimmering jewelry. "Take whatever you like," she said. "We don't have space for it all in our new place, and I'd like to see you enjoy them." Fast forward to today, and you know, we have had not full spring, but the occasional sunny day, which has prompted my own plans for spring cleaning and reorganization after the long winter months. So as I've been cleaning and organizing my own home, I've been reminded of my grandma and her gift for organization and downsizing. And what I've recently learned is that back at that family barbecue, my grandma unknowingly was practicing a specific type of organization called Swedish death cleaning. I learned about this way of cleaning from author Margareta Magnusson in her book, The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning: How to Free Yourself and Your Family from a Lifetime of Clutter. Now, Magnusson describes herself as someone who is between the ages of 80 and 100 and draws upon the practices of death cleaning for her parents, her husband, and herself in her book. The definition of Swedish death cleaning, or dustadning in Swedish, is in the name: to downsize your own possessions before your death or the possessions of a loved one's after theirs. Magnusson describes that despite death being a difficult and sad topic, that death cleaning itself doesn't need to be sad. In fact, it can be a joyful way to relive memories, declutter your home, and ease the burden of grief for your family after you die. Now, done slowly over time, it is just simply the mindful practice of going through the objects in your home to decide what you find most valuable and most important for your family to have in your memory. In the book, Magnusson describes her own experiences she has had death cleaning. After her mother passed from a serious illness, the author helped her father go through her mother's items and downsize his own to move into a smaller apartment. She described how she went through the belongings, or as she went through them, she noticed that her mother had left her little notes throughout the house, detailing what to do with some of the items. She found "donate" written on a piece of paper that was pinned to a blouse. "Take to the museum" was written inside the door of an drawer of an antique desk, and she left a very specific phone number to call. The author described how in her grief, these small gestures made her feel cared for by her mother. And now, since the passing of her husband, Magnusson has been working to organize her own belongings to show the same care to her children. Many of us have done this process without even knowing it, whether it has been downsizing our own lives with intention or going through the belongings of a loved one. To go through things with an up close and personal look at our mortality can be deeply moving. Our objects are important to us. They are parts of our lives that will remain after we are no longer here. and they will remind others of the life that we lived well. And that is one of the aspects of Swedish death cleaning that makes it different than your average spring cleaning trend, sitting with the reality that we will someday die. And you know, I don't know about you, but I don't think that's something we like to do. I mean, it's a deeply personable, vulnerable place we often avoid. Have you ever noticed how we don't like to talk about death? We often say things like, if I die, or if you die, but we don't really say when I die. There is much freedom to be had when we live our lives with the end in mind. And it may sound counterintuitive, but sitting with the reality of death, even for a brief time, can free us in ways we didn't expect. Reflecting on our mortality is not easy. It involves vulnerably sitting with our fears, our finite nature, our limitations, and sitting with them as friends instead of enemies. But when we do this, we embrace the current moments that we're living in life, because we know that these moments won't happen again. We can also have an awareness of and honor the metaphorical deaths that we have, those transitions in life, the stages that we pass through, the versions of ourselves that we are no more. Honoring death as a part of our daily lives can also help us think openly and honestly about our legacy. Thinking of it brings up the deeply personal and sincere question, how will we ourselves be remembered? These are just all different aspects of what it means to sort through our own lives with this intentionality towards our own mortality. Now, as a hospital chaplain, one thing I have learned is that even if you avoid thinking about death, it unfortunately doesn't stop it from happening. Eventually, these reflections and discussions become real and present in big ways. I've experienced people grappling with their mortality often, especially as the palliative care chaplain at the hospital. In this role, I work with patients who have received life-changing diagnoses. And often with this change, the end of a patient's life becomes much clearer than it previously was. And the team that I work with helps patients have the important conversations about their wishes and make decisions about what they want at the end of their lives. Now, I've worked with many patients in palliative care, and each have had their unique stories and personalities. But today, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Vivian. Vivian was deciding whether or not to enter hospice care and to start preparing for the end of her life. She had shoulder-length white hair that her daughter would come in and brush every day and style often. On every visit, Vivian always told me sometime in the visit that she had spunk, wanted me to know that, and that she was going to keep cracking jokes and being, quote, a little naughty until the very end. And her daughter was extremely supportive of whatever decision Vivian wanted to make on this journey. And eventually, Vivian did decide that she was ready to move to cares that would focus on making her comfortable instead of prolonging her life. So I came into her hospital room the day after this decision with a neon pink prayer shawl for her. These are small blankets that are knit by local church volunteers as they pray for our patients. And her eyes lit up as she held tightly onto this shawl, and she told me, "This is one of my news prize possessions. I love this so much." And so we sat with this prayer shawl and we had conversation about her move to a long-term care facility and what objects were most important for her to have in that space. And she asked her daughter for her photo albums and let her daughter know exactly which picture she wanted for her memorial service. And then at the end of this conversation, she held up that prayer shawl that I gave her and said to her daughter, "I'm going to keep this as long as I can, but when I no longer need it, can you give it to my granddaughter?" And then she looked at me and winked as she said, "Even though I know those cats of hers will probably use it." even in the hospital, you know, Vivian was thinking about what she wanted to leave behind and to be remembered by. And a few months after she left the hospital, I got an email from her daughter asking if I could give her a phone call. "I'll be out of town for a few days, and I think my mom would really love to hear from you," she wrote. So I did. I gave Vivian a call, and she told me all about the big news that had happened in her life since we last spoke. She told me about how they sold her house to a young family, how a man who was new to town bought all of her furniture as he was starting a new life here, and just how delighted she was that everything had a new home and a good home. "It just feels so good to not have to worry about any of that," she told me over the phone. And with a lightness to her voice, she said, "It feels good to let go of it all." Vivian and her daughter showed me the joy that is possible through death cleaning. Together, they were downsizing in a way that allowed Vivian to feel the relief of not having those burdens to worry about and experiencing the objects that were precious to her to find new life and new homes with other people. And when I work with my patients at the hospital like Vivian, their closeness to death also brings them the peace of letting go. They slowly but surely loosen their tight grip on earthly possessions, interests, and other things in the world to prepare for their hearts and their souls for the journey of death. And that may sound sad to us, losing interest in the ways of the world. But in fact, what I see is that my patients enjoy what is truly most important in their lives and without worrying about the rest. And that's the thing about Swedish death cleaning. It's not actually about the stuff. It's about feelings. How we feel, of course, about these objects, but how we feel about dying, how we feel about letting go, as well as how we feel we want to be remembered. The reality of life is that it will be shorter than we think that it will be. And when we move through our days with death in mind, it allows us to experience in a small way, paring down life to what is most important. We can do this through death cleaning our objects and also less tangible things like how we spend our time, what systems we keep in place in our world, and what we are putting our energy towards. What are we holding on to in our lives, be it objects, roles, or even older versions of ourselves, that we can let go of and let new growth happen in its place? The dying have much that they teach us about letting go. That process that I see my patients go through at the hospital has taught me how figuring out what is most important in life and letting go of the rest can both enrich my life here in the present, as well as the legacy that I will someday leave behind. In The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, the author tells the story about how she was downsizing her home, and she had this large dining room table, and one that her children had used growing up. She recalled memories of them eating together as a family, or that they did these crafts like model sailboats together. And that table, it had many treasured memories for her. And she realized that table was meant for a family. Her children, they all had their own families and they had bought their own dining room tables. It served a different purpose in her life before and just wasn't needed by her children in the same way now. So she placed an ad to sell it and ended up giving it to a young family who needed a larger table for their extra children. And by selling it in her lifetime, she noted she was able to experience the peace of knowing where it went and knowing that it would be well used instead of worrying about what would someday happen after she died. And that, friends, is part of the freedom of letting go in our lifetime. When we let go of what no longer works for us or what no longer works for our communities, we make space and make room for the next generation to thrive. Engaging with our mortality frees us to keep only what is most important, and then we get the benefit of seeing what happens next with the rest. In our reading today, Mary Oliver shared the three things that we must do in this world: to love what is mortal, to hold it against our bones, knowing our own lives depend on it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. Life is full of this cycle throughout our whole lives of loving, embracing, and letting go. And it can be really sad to face letting go in this life, be it people, things, or even parts of ourselves. But when we live our lives with intention, embracing this cycle of life, we are making space for more love. And if there's one thing I've learned in my time working with the dying, it's that love is the greatest gift that we leave behind.